You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson, and for the next hour, we're going to be talking about all things food. Well, and teeth as well, actually. Not food just
and food. Teeth. That's food an interesting combination,
Sue. Teeth, I know. I'm joined by my fellow presenter, Guy Routledge of Food Rush. Hi, Guy.
Hello, how's it going today?
Yes, not bad at all. We're a bit packed, aren't we, in the studio?
We have a full house.
We have, yeah. All the chairs are taken up. There's no room. And that's because we have three guests today. We have Kevin Barth of Jim Jams and Mike Fairs of Food Innovation Solutions and Simon Fordham of Fordham Henderson Consulting. And that's why we've got no room.
We've got wonderful guests in the room today, and we're going to have all sorts of interesting discussions from ranging from, as you said, teeth, all the way through to business consulting. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the combination goes.
That's quite varied, isn't it? It's quite varied. So, I want to talk about teeth. Now, I've been doing a little bit of research on teeth. I say that, it's not me, obviously, as usual. But tooth decay is largely preventable. So it's something that we don't have to have at all. It's a human-made problem.
It is indeed, yeah.
That is entirely preventable. And it's said that a quarter... five-year-olds have tooth decay before they start school.
And even in the milk teeth as well, which is kind of a shocking statistic that I was reading about this morning.
Dreadful. And then between the ages of 5 and 9 years old, tooth extraction is the most common hospital admission for children.
Really?
Startling, yeah.
It is.
And often that involves general anaesthetic, which is, you know, it's not without its perils, is it?
Indeed, yeah.
And Public Health England, this is their statement, squashes sweetened with sugar, fizzy drinks and juice drinks have no place in a child's daily diet.
Well, the thing that is really crazy about all this, we even put a post up about this on the Food Rush recently, there's so many healthy foods, things like juices and stuff like that, which are really, really bad for the kids' teeth. And yet they're being, you know, touted as being these things that we should be eating, you know, one of your five a day and what have you. And it's, you know, it's a really, really tough issue.
It's so confusing. I mean, it really is confusing. I mean, the advice is to avoid free sugars, which is the added stuff, but as well as natural sugars, which is where it gets confusing. So you get natural sugars in honey and fruit juice and stuff like that. So that's the bit that actually becomes quite confusing for you know, especially if you're a parent.
And the free sugars thing, I think that's something that we talked about in a previous episode.
Yeah, we had Sugarwise.
Sugarwise,
didn't we?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think this is the certification which has come in to try and help get rid of some of those confusions and issues. The wonderful Jim Jams, I believe, are Sugarwise certified.
They are. So Kevin, I know that one of the reasons why you set up Jim Jams is that you felt that your children were packing in so much sugar at breakfast. And indeed, Public Health England says that often half a child's daily allowance has already been eaten before they even get to school.
Well, that's right, yeah. If you have, funny enough, if you have two slices of toast with any chocolate spread, leading brand of chocolate spread on, or jam, that's 100% of your sugar RDA.
Is it really?
You walk out the door in the morning.
Just two slices of toast.
Two slices of toast with some spread. With a leading brand of chocolate spread or a leading brand of jams.
So that means then for the rest of the day, that child cannot eat any type of sugar, whether it's natural sugars or added sugars.
That's right.
Which is highly unlikely, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so a smaller child will probably have one slice of toast, like my children have one slice of toast. But when you're talking senior school level, teenagers, they'll probably have two slices of toast before they walk out the door in the morning.
That's crazy. Yeah, some stats that I was pulling up earlier from the NHS, I think it is, they recommend children aged 7 to 10 should have no more than 24 grams of these free sugars per day, which works out to about 6 cubes. And then children 4 to 6 should be no more than 19 grams of free sugars, which is only 5 sugar cubes. So it can be, you know, it's really tough to judge that. I mean, when you look at the product, you don't see the cubes of sugar in there.
But if you use a normal chocolate spread, that's 3 sugar cubes on your toast.
which is crazy.
I mean, that's
and then there's so much sugar hidden in all the other foods that people are consuming throughout the day, in juices or in, you know, in actual sweets as well, which, you know, I hear that kids are quite fond of.
So this was what kickstarted you with Jim Jams, wasn't it? Because you sort of realised that a whole jar of Nutella had something like 34 cubes of sugar in.
Yeah, not just the leading brand of chocolate spread. All chocolate spreads on the market were ran full of sugar. The equivalent, like you say, so it's 57 sugar cubes in a standard sized jar of chocolate spread.
God, that's unbelievable.
So if you put that on your toast or a piece of bread, that's nearly three quarters of that is refined sugar, which is quite shocking.
Yeah.
We just wanted... my wife is kind of from a health and well-being background. She kind of rubbed off on me with looking at food labels. We had a jar of Nutella, and that was good to have a little dig at her to say, why are you buying Nutella when she's health and well-being? But
yeah, but kids like it, though. That's the problem, isn't it?
They do.
And you want to give them some energy before they get to school.
Yeah, but there is energy and there's sugar.
Exactly. And a lot of parents don't realise, do they?
No.
Well, sugar is energy in a way.
It is.
If you look at it in terms of calorific energy, there's plenty of it in sugar. But it's not good energy.
Not good energy, no. I mean, you can get energy from other foods, can't you? Like a banana will use as much energy as your sugar. So, you know, when you see a tennis player, he's not eating a sugar sandwich.
That's funny that. And they don't have a little sort of Nutella sandwich in the middle of the Wimbledon, do they? No.
They'd have a banana, wouldn't they? Yeah. And hopefully dip it in Jim Jams in future.
Yeah. So there's something about seeing something like that, but then doing something about it. Now, you had a pretty good job. You know, why would you do that? You must be mad.
I am. Thank you.
I think we're all a bit mad.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it's quite an undertaking, though, Kevin, to give up your job and then do something about it.
I'm just crazy and wild. I don't care what I do. No, I just felt really passionate. Me and my wife was talking one evening, and then we was looking at the spread category in general, really, and she said the name, well, let's call it Jim Jams. And that name kind of struck a chord with me. It was like a light bulb moment, really. It was kind of something inside me went, that's a great name. It's just a great brand name. I just can see that, you know, everywhere, really, on different products, not just, you know, jams and spreads. I just love the name. So I kind of done a little bit of digging, had no background in, you know, food, FMCG whatsoever. Had a look around, done some research, had a look at some recipes. So we kind of come up some recipes, looked at other ingredients before our final ingredient, other ingredients and other sweets and natural sweeteners we use kind of left an aftertaste.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when we come up with maltitol, which is from the xylitol family, which is actually kind on your teeth, it's what they brush their teeth with in Scandinavia and especially Finland. They give the children xylitol in the schools to brush their teeth with. So yeah, it was, and it doesn't alter the taste. It makes it more smooth and creamier. So there's no aftertaste in our chocolate spreads. They've won great taste awards because we knew normally there's a compromise, or people think there's a compromise with reduced sugar, no added sugar products. They're waiting for the aftertaste, or they're waiting for that kind of powdered taste. So we, once we got the recipe right, we entered our products into the Great Taste Awards with the Guild of Fine Food, and we fortunately got a 2-star Great Taste Award, which is amazing.
And 2 stars, fantastic, I mean, a huge achievement. But important to have that on the packet so that people do realise they're not compromising on taste.
That's right. I mean, when we're at food fairs and people taste it, as soon as they taste it, they'll swap. Yeah. You know, we've done a recent show with a well-known mums forum, online mums forum. 95% of mums, once tasting our chocolate spread, would switch from the brand they use now.
Fantastic.
Excellent. So what were you doing? What was your proper job when you were having these conversations with your wife in the evening?
I was actually, I was in IT. No, I was in, I was IT, and I worked for big corporate firms, really, a long time at the London Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
I was getting a bit disillusioned with the corporate life. We moved further up in Essex, Suffolk border way, so the commute was getting longer. And when I come up with the Jim Jams idea, I couldn't balance both. I couldn't work 5 days a week and then do Jim Jones.
But initially you were in a full-time job in London, were commuting, and then you were coming home in the evenings and doing all the packing and the delivering.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you sleep at all?
Love it to go through all of that. I mean, you're talking about working 9 to 5 and then 5 to 9 on the other business. It's a tall order, isn't it?
Yeah, well, look at the state of me.
Luckily, we're radio.
I've got a face for radio.
Yeah, I've got a face.
What I would say is, look, the bag's under my nose. Under my eyes. My nose is wearing a saddle, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think he's doing himself a disservice there. But no, it is exhausting.
So you've got a really nice brand here because the blue and white stripes are very, very distinctive. You know, blue and white stripes are pyjamas. And actually, on the shelf, a couple of years ago, the spreads were really quite old-fashioned on a shelf, weren't they? And these do stand out quite significantly.
Yeah, we felt when we looked at the category, when we was kind of toying with the idea of actually doing it full time and then looking at the spread category in general, it was kind of old fashioned.
Yeah.
Since we launched, so 2.5-3 years ago, obviously the peanut butter category's kind of got that young consumer feel about it. But we felt the jam and the chocolate spread category was still very way behind. I think, you know, you look at the jam category, you've got a doily on top or a gingham lid. It's very old.
Still grandma, isn't it?
Still grandma, really. And it's all ran full of sugar. You know, jam, you know, leading brands of jam have got more sugar than leading brands of chocolate spread. So that was another reason, you know, we was disappointed that the vast majority of the jams had more sugar than fruit content. So we looked at that. We said, well, surely you should have more fruit in your jam than sugar. So we've got a new jam as well. It's just no added sugar jam, 100% fruit, 100% natural. But yeah, we knew to engage with the younger consumer, we need an engaging brand name and also a bright packaging. And we feel we've done that with our blue and white stripes. There's a little pocket on the side, so there's a play on words with that nostalgic name for your pyjamas.
Yeah.
So Simon and Mike, have you tasted these before? I have on several occasions.
I haven't yet. No.
Do you want to have a quick taste? So we've got Jim Jam's milk chocolate spread in front of us. We've got some teaspoons.
And the hazelnut.
There you go. And there's the hazelnut one.
I've tasted them before.
Do you want another little taste?
Definitely.
Mm-mm. Which one's this?
That's the hazelnut. So that's like a healthy equivalent to that well-known hazelnut spread.
Mm.
That's incredibly smooth.
Do you like it?
Very much. My wife and I are complete chocoholics. And that just hits the spot. Very well.
Well, we knew
it's the texture that's important, isn't it?
Very much.
Whenever I see kind of nut products like this, it always makes me think that it's going to be grainy or maybe even chunky and crunchy. Because I guess you get that with peanut butter, but this is it's unbelievably smooth.
Mm. Are you a convert now? Have you not had this before?
Well, I have to say, I'm not a chocolate spread kind of guy. I like avocado on my toast or peanut butter or something like that.
You're such a hipster guy.
Thank you, Sue. I don't know how to come back to that.
If
anybody knows me, that I'm definitely not like that. but this is really good.
Mm. If you have kids to stay, though, definitely get in a jar of this. It's really, really good. So you spent ages getting this right, getting the taste profile right, the feel of it right, you know, the texture right. Got yourself a great taste award. Then it's scaling up and then trying to sell it in. So what was the next bit of your story?
The next bit really was to look for a big manufacturer, a large manufacturer that we can kind of scale and hopefully they can, you know, scale up with us. So we kind of looked, if we would have started this journey 30 years ago, it'd have been a nightmare looking through the yellow pages, looking for food manufacturers. But Google is a wonderful thing.
It really is.
So we kind of searched high and low for jam and chocolate spread manufacturers. So we got a whole lorry load of different chocolate spreads and jams in our kitchen. Got friends and family around, had a big taste up session. got all the kids as well involved. The kids of the friends.
Because ultimately pester power is quite important, isn't it?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, children don't care about sugar, but obviously the adults do, but the children do care about taste.
Absolutely.
If they don't like a taste.
And they'll tell you, won't they?
And they will tell you, yeah.
So sorry, you got a whole load of other people's products together to taste the the flavours and the textures and stuff before you made your own? Or
no, we had a recipe and then we went to certain manufacturers to say, could you do this recipe for us? Mm-hmm. Then we got those their recipe, so their version of our recipe from different manufacturers. So we didn't get other products. No,
and
we so, got.
Right. And they were all kind of different enough that you could taste them all and then choose the one that was the one.
Yeah, there's different manufacturers. You did, you know, for instance, some people use a hazelnut paste, some use crushed hazelnuts. So there's different variants. There's, you know, different levels of rapeseed oil, different levels of cocoa powder, skim milk powder. So there's these slight little deviations. It does alter the taste. And different manufacturers, you know, if you had, I don't know, a packet of crisps from, say, one brand to another, they will taste slightly different. You kind of know, like a beer, different brands taste different.
All and different ingredients with different qualities as well.
So whilst you'll have your recipe and you'll know the balance of that recipe, you're still going to get quite a variation from manufacturers, and you've got to get the right manufacturer to get it exactly as you want it.
Yeah. So we had a big tasting session, as I said, and it kind of boiled down and everyone kind of agreed on the same product. So we went to the manufacturers, had a meeting, told them our idea. They love the idea and the branding. I'm quite well driven and I'm very ambitious. So I kind of presented my ambitions to them and where I felt the brand was going. And also I showed them the category and said it's British style and needs reinvigorating, really. And the key to the category in general is youth. Youth needs to buy into the, you know, that people, you keep reading about the jam category is in decline. There's probably a reason for that, probably the high sugar content, and it's very old fashioned.
Yeah.
So we kind of try to kill two birds with one stone with having a bright packaging and a great tasting jam that's lower sugar as well.
Well, that's following one of the big trends that we see at the moment too, isn't it? With things going healthier, or, you know, they're going free from or lower sugars or all those different kinds of things. And then a lot of that is being driven by the younger consumers.
Yeah.
And health is becoming more and more important. People are using food as health products in a way, aren't they?
Yeah. Almost like medicine in a funny way.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, you're from Food Innovation Solutions. We're going to come on to you in a minute. Kevin's sort of doing everything right, really, isn't he? Do you think?
Trying to spot.
Don't go into a crowded sector. Everybody's innovating already, unless you've got something totally amazing, which is very difficult. You know, spot what's a bit, you know, dowdy. What needs reinvigorating, and have a look then if you can make some disruption.
Yes, and I think that's the right word. Disruption, is it? So if you've got a mature category like that hasn't had any innovation for a long time, and just looking at the packaging, I know you can't see it at home, but you know, 83% less sugar is a very significant claim to be able to make, and a very compelling reason for both parent and, well, principally parent on that claim. But, you know, it's also fun, it's lovingly crafted, so it's natural, homemade, all those sort of cues that we'd expect to see on successful products, but with the added bonus of ticking the health box. And that really is, for the gatekeeper, the parent, a really important piece. So, yes, I would say doing a very good job. And
Now you've tasted it as well.
Well, I actually it's good. Tasted it 3 years ago at a food fair. And Kevin and I had stands next to each other, believe it or not.
Brilliant. That's cool.
So, yes, I've not followed it closely, but it's really nice to catch up and see the success now.
And Simon, you at Fordham Henderson, you've worked with over 250 pre-revenue startups. You must have seen all sorts of companies, and I'm guessing quite a lot of them making the same types of mistakes. But it's sales. It's all about sales, because if you don't get those sales, you can have the best product in the world, can't you? But you've got to get people to buy it.
Yeah, very much so. And a lot of the challenges I find in helping pre-venue startups is that they sometimes chase the money before they actually chase the sales. So they're looking for direct funding or seed funding to get them up and ready, and they promote not the product but themselves. And that's tough when an investor is looking to invest in a good team. They want the product to be saleable, marketable, and, you know, and already got traction within the marketplace. And we've already gone through with Jim Jams. You've probably done everything I would tell a new startup not to do. You're going to a very crowded marketplace with a very difficult product that's already got traction in the industry that needs to be disrupted to actually get some sales and traction. And all credit to you, you've done it.
So how did you go about getting the funding then, Kevin? So did you just fund initially yourself? Did you going to these manufacturers? How did you do it in the first instance?
Yeah, I now live in a tent. No, we had a little bit of savings. Mm. I say had savings. And we kind of kicked off with we've rebranded since we launched. We had a really raw label before. So I spent, done a lot of mistakes as you'd expect with, starting in a food business that I've never had any experience before. So spent money on design. And when we kind of was running out of money, we had some distribution. We'd just launched with Ocado. We was talking to the supermarkets, was looking very, very positive meetings and very positive feedback from the supermarkets. Went to the investors, Tell a Lie. I've tied up with a company called Grocery Accelerator.
Oh, yeah.
And Grocery Accelerator picked me up from about 200 companies. I picked 5 out of 200 companies. We then pitched in front of several investors they had lined up.
Yep.
Two out of the 3 investors loved Jim Jams. So we had two wanting to invest in it. Not massive amounts of money, but just to get us off, you know.
When you say not massive amounts, what are you talking about?
Probably about £60,000.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's a lot of money it's a lot of money.
But that's the sort of money that you're going to need if you're going to start taking off.
Yeah, you probably need a lot more than that as a unknown brand. I mean, we're still very unknown to a lot of people. I still go to food shows and people have not heard of Jim Jams.
Yeah.
Which is one of the biggest challenges starting any brand, as everyone knows, starting as business. Budget is tight, but 30 to 60,000 is still not a lot of money when you're trying to market it.
Yeah. So to really make inroads into category, you're going to have at least that, really.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of got us, that orders the stock. You know, when we said about manufacturing earlier, it's the difficulty, the fine balancing act is with when you find a big manufacturer, okay, you've got a big manufacturer that you can scale up with. Mm. However, on the flip side of that, they'll expect the minimum order quantity.
Yeah.
And that minimum order quantity, because they're a big manufacturer, will expect it to be, for instance, 9 pallets of...
But they'll expect that regularly as well, won't they?
Yeah,
they want to see that consistency all the way coming through. And that's really, really tough to predict at the very beginning.
It is.
Luckily for you, you've got an ambient product. I mean, if you're trying to make ice cream, that's a nightmare. Yeah. Whereas this lasts, for a year or something? So
yeah, just over a year, yeah. Mm. So that
makes a big difference. At least
does
you can
help.
Stick it on your garage if you're desperate.
because of the reduced sugar, is there any reduction in shelf life? Because I know sugar is one of those things that can preserve things. That's why, you know, the jams, I've got jams in my fridge that I found at the back of the fridge the other day that have been there for 2-3 years and they're still absolutely fine. There's so much sugar in them that they're not going off anytime soon. So is there a difference here?
Not with chocolate spread. Chocolate spread is, once that's open, it lasts 3 to 4 months in your cupboard. So it's fine. It's
not even in the fridge?
No, not in the fridge. But if you put it in the fridge, it kind of crystallizes and goes lumpy. So it's better to leave our chocolate spread in the cupboard. It makes it, and it's smoother.
Mm.
It's creamier. And you can make really simple, you can use it as an ingredient as well.
Mm, yeah.
You know, you can use it in baking as well.
Well, yeah, when I tried it earlier, it reminded me of some of the stuff we had from the 5D chocolate guys, because they have their like little sauces. And I was thinking, yeah, you could do so much more with this than just spread it on toast. You know, you could put it in your peanut, in your peanut butter? No, in your porridge.
You could
make a chocolate sauce with it. Also, very versatile.
Funny enough, I've got one of your leaflets here, Kevin. It's a good old segue. So I've got stuff, you've got 3 ways. You can make hot chocolate from it. Milkshake, protein shakes with some bananas. Obviously, you can have it on pancakes. That's very nice.
That sounds good.
And again, part of what you're trying to do, I think, is trying to educate people how they can use it. So it's not just for the kids. You can use it for all sorts of stuff. Oh, look, they've got there's all sorts of stuff with pastry and you've got all sorts of recipes on there. Very good. So is that part of your mission is to get people to use it more widely?
Yeah,
as a kid's.
Well, for instance, you know, you look at a chocolate milkshake, for instance, or a hot chocolate in the high street coffee shops. But, you know, there's an article on those talking about sugar earlier. They are ram full of sugar. Mm. Now, you can make a really simple hot chocolate or milkshake with our chocolate spread. Even I can make them. Just in a blender, ice, milk, a couple of spoonfuls of Jim Jams, you've got a no added sugar milkshake in, you know, so that's
and kids love it.
Mm. And it's different uses of it. You can bake with it, put the jar in the microwave for 30 seconds, it melts like a sauce, just pour that straight into flour and eggs. So we've made diabetic friendly cookies.
Simon's getting so excited over there.
I think I'm putting on weight just listening.
Yeah.
You didn't have any breakfast this morning, did you?
No.
There you go.
But you've got to try the cheesecake. That is amazing.
Is it?
The chocolate cheese, no added sugar chocolate cheesecake is really, really
and
good.
And if we go onto your website, can we get some of those? I presume you've got lots of nice recipes on there, and that's jimjams-spreads.co.uk.
That's right. Yeah. Mm. We're just revamping our website. It's still there. Don't worry. It's still there. We've got some lovely recipes actually, and we're building those up week on week, and our social media following, that's been amazing for us actually. That's kind of the word of mouth on that,
getting a community together.
That's where you can kind of take on the bigger brands as well, where that you know, the marketing side on the social media is amazing.
Yeah, it's a level playing field on that as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Exactly. And we've got for instance, Instagram has been amazing for us. We've got so many health, you know, we didn't appreciate the health and well-being consumer would kind of jump on board with their pancake stacks, and
wow.
I don't know how they stack these pancakes they're a foot high, and I don't know how they cut into them and eat them properly.
I think they just glue them together, don't they? Just
probably,
the camera.
Yeah. So now you're in you're in Ocado, Co-op, Holland and Barrett. I think you're in Morrison's. Are you in Tesco's as well?
Tesco's. So we launched recently in Sainsbury's as well. And we're talking to the other big two supermarkets. So hopefully, we'll have pretty big distribution, which is amazing. And it's great that the supermarkets have actually feel the same way that we do regarding sugar and like you said about tooth decay within children. You know, one in three children start school suffer from tooth decay. I think the NHS, it's the biggest bill for children, which is 40 or 50 million they spend on tooth extraction every year.
Wow.
It's 1,000 operations a day.
Yeah.
So that's a shocking statistic. So it's great that the retailers are backing our no added sugar chocolate spreads. Yeah,
and the next sort of step, I presume you need some more cash, and then it means that you can do that sort of another leap of, in terms of marketing to really take on the big boys.
More cash? Are you offering, sir?
I've got about a tenner. If that's any help.
That's fine. Every little helps. The next step really is just raising brand awareness, and shows like this is great for us, so thank you for letting us to come on. It's right. The main thing is for people to buy it, pick it off the shelf, because people will still look at the less sugar and they're kind of on instinct will go to a category, as not, everyone does, and
it's not proper.
Yeah. And they just pick up the brand that they normally buy. And we're all, you know, we all do it. You kind of, if you've got your shopping list, or you just go up and you're used to it. But if people just stopped and looked at the category and just try it, we're doing a Jim James Taste Challenge at the moment, and we did it at the big festival, Jamie Oliver and Alex James's festival in the summer. And we said, would you buy the well-known leading spread or ours after tasting it? And we had another huge success. There was two bins. We had about three, and you put your spoon in a certain bin.
It's a nice way to do it.
We had a big mock-up of our jar and a mock-up of the leading brand. And I think there was about 250 spoons in our bucket and about five in the well-known spread. So that's amazing.
Excellent.
That's brilliant. It must be a real confidence boost as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Considering it was hard graft to get this going, and you know, doing it alongside the full-time job. So to get that kind of validation from, you know, the very people who you're trying to reach is fantastic. And they're the ones who are really going to help drive it forward through that word of mouth.
It's great. It's kind of you feel some days when you do a business that it's up and down, like every small business, it's a roller coaster ride. And you some every kind of every other day you kind of, shall we kind of pack this in, it's like hitting your head against a brick wall. But then you get an email from someone or a mother. Last week I got one from a mum of an autistic boy, and he couldn't have sugar because he would be jumping up the walls.
Oh, really?
They found our chocolate spread, and he just loves it, and that's all he'll eat. But it's just.
But it makes him feel like he's part of the rest of the school, you know, that who doing eating that sort of stuff, and he, you know, he can join in. Yeah.
And it's emails like that. It's just great. Yeah. You just kind of feel.
Well, we love it. I love it.
Yeah, I'm a convert. I have to say, like, wasn't a chocolate spread fan, but I can see all sorts of interesting things you can do with it. Brilliant.
Simon Fordham from Fordham Henderson Consulting. You work with lots of startups, and I know you've done quite a bit in the food industry. You've worked with butchers and bakers and biscuitiers, is that a word? Brewers, and all sorts of things. What are you seeing in terms of trends at the moment in people starting up? Do you advise them and say, that's really nice, but you know, you're not going to make a business out of it? I mean, do you have to say that sometimes?
Yeah, there is a bit of that. And you have to be brutally honest with people. You can't advise people to go into an industry, specifically the food sector, and expect them to win overnight. It's a really tough call for them, and I'm sure Kevin is nodding by my side about how much incredibly hard work it is to actually make inroads into a really tough sector. And I do see people come up with ideas, and innovators specifically, and then sometimes they're more interested around the product than they are actually the selling of the product. So they forget actually you've got to commercialize this sufficiently to make some money, and if you don't, and why are you doing it? And sometimes it's about just being able to go in their garden shed and create something rather than getting it out onto the market.
That's fine, but that's a lifestyle business. You're not really, you might just tick over, and there's nothing wrong with that, is there? But a lot of people want to make a proper business, and you have to look at it like any other business.
Yeah, very much so. And the commercialisation of products and inventions and service industries is really important. So I try to enlighten them about how we can commercialise and what they can do to get their product into the marketplace or even service. And it's an incredibly hard thing to do. You know, if it was easy, we'd all be doing it. But there's lots of big companies out there that have failed dramatically when developing new products onto the marketplace. And, you know, they've lost lots and lots of money. So when it comes down to innovators and disruptors such as Kevin, I take my hat off and say, go for it. If the product's good enough, it will make its way.
Yeah.
It's just finding that niche market to get into, how you can disrupt it, and then finding the right channels to make it work.
Is there anything at the moment, any particular category that you think is ripe for disruption?
Good question.
Oh, wow. Good question. You know, we've gone through some fantastic, in the last 10 years, the food industry, especially restaurants and pop-ups in London and the other big commuting cities have gone leaps and bounds. The quality of the food in this country has excelled, I think, in the last 5 to 10 years. And we're benefiting from a resurgence in really good, healthy, organic, locally produced food. And it's a great place to be, whether it's a food market in Camden Lock or Shoreditch or Fenchurch Street Square. They're everywhere. And, you know, we've got artisan breads, we've got...
But that's different from making a business though, Kevin, isn't it? I mean, having a stall and a pop-up's great if you want a lifestyle and, you know, you prefer that to, I don't know, working, stacking shelves. But you know, to move on to where Kevin is, that is different.
But those pop-ups allow people to test their products in the marketplace. Mm.
It's part of the process.
It's part of the maturing in not only just the product, but also the business person themselves, because it validates the product to the consumer directly. And you only have to walk around, you know, Spitalfields or Shoreditch and see the queues at different types of market stalls to what food is actually selling at the moment, whether it be crepes with chocolate or whether it be artisan breads or whether it be, you know, great homemade burgers.
Would you recommend somebody then to do something like that in the first instance where set up a pop-up? And we had Patricia Michaelman from La Fromagerie a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and she did exactly the same thing.
And La Fromagerie is a huge, huge success. I mean, and it's massive, but she's been going for 25, 30 years. And the first thing she did was have a stall in Camden Market, didn't she?
It acted like a pop-up because she could, you know, open the doors and get the people in to, you know, get some feedback. And I think that in-person feedback is so important.
And the feedback from, you know, people that are actually going to put their hand in their pocket and buy the product, not just family and friends.
Someone says, oh, yeah, that sounds great. But, you know, you need to get someone to pay, you know, pay with their actual money.
Yeah, find out what your true value is in the marketplace for the product that you're producing. And set your prices so that people understand you know, where you are in the market. And if there, if it is a, you know, an artisan burger and it's worth £9.50, then sell it for £9.50 and prove to people that it's got true value at £9.50.
I mean, I think we've had quite a succession of people on the show, and the thing that comes up quite a lot for us is that there's a real sort of desire for Mexican food, and then starting to cook Mexican food at home. There's very poor Mexican products in the supermarkets, actually. And for me, that would be one that would be ripe for disruption, I think.
I came across a really interesting Mexican product recently. This woman reached out to us and said, "I've been developing this new bar." And I was like, "Okay, yeah, fine, whatever." But came round and actually we tried it. It was a bit rude. I didn't say that. It was just in my internal thoughts. Yeah. But she came around and she, you know, told the whole story and presented this new product, which is like a compressed raw bar made with ground up blue corn from Mexico. And not only is it, you know, a really interesting product with a great taste, she's doing all sorts of work to, you know, put in machinery and, you know, give the control to the producers rather than, you know, owning the whole thing herself. And I thought that was really, really interesting. We should try and get her on the show.
Yeah,
but yeah, I remember Ollie is always talking about Mexican food and saying it's a big trend in that area.
Other thing as well is Nigerian food or some African food, which again, just starting to see that on the restaurant scene in London. I'm not quite sure about the other cities around the UK. And I wonder if that's a new bird, because there's some really interesting tastes for that. But that's not being exploited at the moment in other areas.
No, there's quite a few opportunities around at the moment. I think Caribbean food and Jamaican and Mexican are definitely up there at the top of the list. And people's tastes have changed quite dramatically over the last few years. They want to go out and actually taste some real flavours. And historically, British food has been quite bland, and we call it brown food.
beige food.
Yeah. Lots of gravy, lots of pies, and you know. But we're different than that. And if you just have to walk around London now and see the different types of restaurants that are about and the quality of food, I think we're doing pretty well.
And so for your consulting firm, can somebody come to you and say, "Look, I've got this business idea. I want somebody who's objective to sit with me and look at how I might take it forward." Is that how it works?
That's exactly what we do. And we look at everything within the business, really, and whether it's a startup or post revenue and small, we look at developing the people in the business as well as the business itself. Mm. It's interesting what Kevin was saying earlier on about the three of them working their socks off. And you know, one thing we try and lecture on very early in business is to get a great team around you. Because, you know, if you're doing everything yourself night and day, actually what you've got is a job. You haven't got a business. And you know, it's when you get that team around you that's professional and probably better at what they do than you are, you can really move the business forward. And that's about scaling the business.
But I can imagine that's a huge blocker to somebody who's listening now and thinking, "Well, that's great. I've got an idea, but I've got no money, no sales yet. So how can I hire people if I haven't got the funds?" And so there's this whole kind of chicken and egg thing, and so many different points along the journey of starting and growing a business. There's a lot of challenges.
Yeah, and not every food product is going to be, you know, one that flies off the shelves. It's going to be maybe a steady stream of sales, building up traction in the marketplace so that consumers are buying into it on a regular basis. So, you know, those consumers actually become, you know, really good clients of you. And again, as Kevin said, the advocacy of word to mouth from another customer is probably the best marketing you can get with the advent of social media, you know, the Twitter, Instagram and any other social media product out of the platform. It's really good to get those thoughts and comments from customers that have truly experienced the product to say it as well.
And on your website, you say you offer the business pressure test, and that is understanding, you'd love this, Kevin, see what happens in your business, understand how well your business is doing in 7 critical areas. What are those key areas?
Okay.
Quick, write it down. Write it down.
Yeah. You can just go onto the website. So, yeah. Scribbling it down on the back of the screen.
Yeah, the 7 critical. Okay, so I call them there's actually 5 to begin with, the 5 pillars of business, and that's people, the marketing, sales, funding, and operations. And key to any business is getting those 5 key areas right. The other thing we look at is holistically the strategic development of the business. So we're talking about, have you actually got a strategic plan of where you're going to take this business in, whether it be 12, 18 months or 3 years' time? And then we also look at the individuals in the business. So it's about the you. It's about, why am I doing this? Why did you start the business in the first place? What was your passion? What was your vision? Who have you got around you supporting you in the family and in the business sector? Because it's, you know, it's really tough out there running a business. Mm. And it's a really lonely thing. Mm. And people struggle with that, you know. And I've had, through coaching, CEOs of really big companies actually tell me stuff. And, you know, they say, I've never told anyone about my business. You know, and they open up, and it gives them the sense of being able to actually find someone who can empathise with them as a mentor and coach or business consultant who's actually been there, done it, and laid awake at night wondering how he's going to pay some people tomorrow because the, you know, a client check hasn't come in, or that particular customer hasn't paid for that pallet. Or, you know,
so really, do you really, really need a business plan? You know, obviously, if you work in big corporate world, we've all seeing business plans that are 50 pages long, yep, and, you know, targets, yep, and who's doing this. Mm-hmm. But if there's just an operation with just a couple of you, do you need a business plan? What would that look like?
Whatever you call it, whether it's a strategic plan or a business plan or a business model canvas or a visionary plan that's stuck up on the wall, you need to be able to focus where you're going in business. You know, and when you start employing people, that becomes even more relevant because, you know, you owe it to the people you employ to have a plan of how you're going to grow and develop the business and them.
Just be on one page where you just, it's a touchstone that, you know, just, I need to read this, I need to have this on the wall or something, yeah, just to remind me all the time why I'm doing this. Absolutely, and so I don't go off piece.
Yeah, and don't forget that plans change, you know, we the big sledgehammer of life comes along and makes changes along that path, so we have to be prepared to change that plan and adjust, but that's what being good in business is all about. Mm. It's being able to.
And if you've got an external mentor or somebody, you know, like you and in your business, that's somebody who can keep you on that straight and narrow, isn't it?
Yeah, we do tend to give our business people a bit of a kick sometimes, and that's important because it's about keeping them motivated as well. It's tough, and you're going to wake up in the morning, you don't want to go to work because you've got something to deal with, but you know, it's, you're doing it for a reason, and it's about always revisiting that original reason why you did it, and, you know, keeping your mojo going and understanding what that passion is about. And,
yeah, or as Kevin said, somebody sends you an email or writes you a letter, and suddenly you go, oh, yeah, I remember now why I'm doing this. It hurts, but I remember why I'm doing it.
Yeah, that just underlines and everything you do, that you're doing the right thing at the right time and you're doing it for the right reasons.
And then moving on to you, Mike, that's Mike Fares at Food Innovation Solutions. You provide something slightly different than that, don't you?
We do, yes. We probably come in after they've spoken there. And so we run a food market research and innovation consultancy. So we focus heavily on actually delivering, scaling the operational side, packaging, some brand work, what all that looks like. And also understanding the voice of the customer. So what are the customers really wanting all this? That's the one thing that a lot of business owners forget about is what do their customers really want and how are you going to meet those needs and exceed those expectations. So we focus a lot on that side of the
equation.
Because
there's a lot of talk in the tech world as opposed to the food world about KYC, which is know your customer. Know your customer, know your customer.
Yeah.
And what they're after and what they're looking for.
So important. It should start with that, and it should be a continuous part of the conversation you have with your customers. Because if you lose sight of that, which a lot of people do, then, you know, ultimately you're going to be made irrelevant. So, you know, we talked about that word disruption, which we use a lot in our industry, but that's all it is. You've just forgotten to talk to your customer and forgotten what really they
want.
So
when Kevin started, you know, he's obviously had this idea, hasn't talked to any customers though. He's got an idea, feels quite clear about this idea.
Yes.
But then what he did do was get a whole bunch of people in to really get their views. That's what you have to do, isn't it? Not just your mum, but, you know, everybody you can think of.
Yeah, completely. Insight can be personal as well as a big quant piece of research.
Yeah.
So, you know, that it all started listening to Kevin's story with that piece of insight. I'm actually really worried about giving my kids this food because it's unhealthy. So, you know, that is good quality insight. If you can then provide or invent a solution that will meet those needs of those customers, then you're in a good place.
So is it important to just keep focused on that problem as opposed to the solution? So don't fall in love with the solution, fall in love with the problem and keep constantly thinking, how am I going to meet the problem that keeps coming up with, and then really, really stick to that.
That's sort of my definition of an opportunity.
Right.
Because you're creating a solution for a problem.
Mm.
definition opportunity. And that tends to be the case. So to go into a very mature, brand-dominated category with a food product is really, really difficult if you have no significant point of difference. And that's the importance of the whole thing. So when you can be an agent provocateur within that space with a point of difference and evolve, if you like, the expectations or needs of those consumers or even a group of those consumers within that category, then you've got something that's tangible.
So if we take Jim Jams, for example, you know, there is this issue around teeth and health for kids and sugar and all that sort of stuff. You know, and Kevin's really driving into that. Is it a good idea to really, really campaign on that, even at the expense of, you know, Nutella and the big boys, you know, counteract what you're trying to do, and they've got much more money and they're much bigger and tougher. But should you just keep plugging away at that? Because that is his differentiator. You can't then, I mean, it's difficult then to maybe do, or as a price differentiator, as your only differentiation. You know, that's quite tough, isn't it?
Yeah, tiering, pricing, all that sort of stuff.
You still need to be different on top of that. Mm.
Completely. Mm. And I think that's where, I think it's quite a smart strategy to target a big, very successful brand and think about how you would do things slightly differently. Mm. And, you know, that's not a bad place to be because you understand the breadth of appeal is there. Customers love the idea of it. They may not necessarily love every element of it, and they know there's a guilt or a consequence to it. Yeah. So if you can remove things like guilt and consequences from something that's got huge breadth of appeal and tell and communicate that story effectively to those customers, actually it's a lot easier than creating something completely new. Because for startups, one of the biggest problems we come across is, well, if this is really so new, how do you communicate
where are you going to stock that? Because the buyer wouldn't know whether to put that in.
Exactly.
You know, some of these, originally the alcoholic ices for ice cream. So do we store that in the chiller cabinet? Do we put it?
And that is, that's always something that I often find myself saying this to either, well, even more established companies as well. I came across recently a UHT hummus, which has been developed.
Right.
And I thought, okay, interesting for one segment, maybe not so for other segments of the market. And they were talking about putting it on the shelves in supermarkets. And I was thinking, well, for one, that packaging needs some work. But for two, where are you going to put it? Because everywhere in the supermarket, well, the place that you go in the supermarket to buy hummus is in the chiller cabinet, but this is UHT, so you don't need it to be chilled. In fact, you wouldn't chill it because it would damage the packaging. That question around, you know, the place on the shelf or the place in the supermarket is always huge. And if you innovate too much and go too far away from the norms, then it's confusing. And it doesn't get the visibility that it needs.
I mean, that is interesting because we had John Stapleton on the show a few weeks ago who started off New Covent Garden Soup Company. And obviously you've worked there as well. Now, that again, they had that issue. Mm. Was soup in the chiller cabinet? Blimey, you only got tins of soup then.
Yes.
but just about managed to make that happen. But that is a huge challenge. If you are going to develop something and you want it to be slightly easier, it's probably, as you say, better to target a sort of possibly slightly lazy, complacent brand who's got, you know, number one in the sector.
Yeah,
and the disruption that's going to come from Jim Jams is a bit left field, and it's, oh my God, what are we going to do? You know, and they might not be well prepared to take that on.
Yeah, I find with big mature brands, they suffer from what I refer to as a success trap. Mm. So, you know, they're very good at doing what they do. So they just do more of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily then also think laterally about what else could we do. So scale becomes their primary reason for business.
So just shifting loads of it.
Yeah. Exactly. It's volume, volume, volume. Mm. And it's one brand. And the bigger those brands get, the more risk averse they get. If you do something differently, how will that impact the bigger brand? You know, and all that sort of stuff. So actually that's the role of, or the opportunity for challenger brands to come in and really meet those consumer needs that the big brands perhaps are a little afraid to address.
And you can move much quicker, can't you, if you're smaller? You know, you can change direction quickly. Mm. You can make decisions and do it the next day almost.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Nimble, flexible.
Mm. Yeah.
Your ability to communicate in a non-corporate way with real people. You know, all those things are tangible benefits. Mm. And if you look at the retailers, because we work with a lot of them, you know, they are really looking for those challenger brands to come into their categories, because otherwise, what's the reason for a consumer to go and visit one retailer rather than another, etc.? So there is a demand for it, both from the customer and also the consumer. But you've got to get it right.
So with Kevin's sort of Jim Jams brand, you know, he's starting to get into supermarkets. You're saying those buyers want to see that type of product, as long as you can deliver on time, the quality's good.
Exactly.
You know, and you meet all their corporate things that they need in place. But they're actually searching for those at the moment.
That's absolutely the case. So innovation is also a way for those retailers to differentiate. Mm. And they are in a share war, as is, you know, anyone who sells food in the industry. So they are all looking for ways that they can gain share, gain loyalty, create a reason to visit for a customer to come to their shop rather than another shop.
Mm.
And what that means is they need stories. They need things to communicate. They need an experience in store that's going to give them a different experience. So brands like Jim Jams, consumers remember that, they recognize that. And you know, if they're not on the shelf, then
they think your supermarket's a fuddy-duddy if you haven't got Kevin's stuff on your shelf.
I totally agree. But do you think the supermarkets, they're in this kind of share war, like you said, you know, they're looking for the attention just as much as the brands who are in the supermarkets.
Yeah.
Do you think they embrace the challenger brands more than the innovation, because the innovation is a little bit risky for them?
So I think the challenger brands are their innovation in a lot of their eyes. But I would also argue that actually the risk is not huge for the retailer. The risk is quite significant.
Because if it doesn't sell, they'll just delist you.
Exactly. Yeah. So from that point of view, I would say the risk is with the challenger brand. And that's where you've got to do your homework. You've got to make sure that you've got the right story. You know, you've done your homework. You've done your consumer research. You've got your supply chain, your distribution, your accreditation, et cetera, et cetera. All those things.
So many things.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it is. It's almost a different language to go and talk to, you know, multiple retailer about getting a listing like that. So there is an expertise and a requirement for that stuff. But I would argue that the desire remains there, provided you can meet that criteria for them to list new, challenging, different products.
So if somebody wants some business advice, obviously they go to Simon.
Yeah.
I'm afraid we're running out of time already. But no worries. So in terms of food innovation solutions, what do you offer to? I presume they have to be a bit further up the journey than a startup.
It depends, to be honest, Sue. So we do three things fundamentally. We do strategic planning and consultancy. So it's where I'll go into a business who feels they need to innovate, but don't know how. So I'll create that strategic plan for them. And then Food Innovation Solutions will deliver the products, will deliver the menus. We work a lot in food service, and most of the high street chains that you go into as consumers in restaurants, we do all their product development, supply chain creation, operations. And then the third business is Good Sense Research, which is the market research business. So where you need to understand what the voice of the customer is and how to use the voice of the customer, both in the strategy and in the execution, then it's a virtuous circle we've attempted to create.
So one of your recent projects I know is Ben & Jerry's, and Ben & Jerry's has got a particular brand and a particular tone of voice and style. And then presumably they're saying, well, we want a flagship store somewhere, and then they have it in Soho. And then what they're trying to do is look at, okay, well, how does that brand transfer into this space? What menu should we offer? What should it feel like? What should it look like? So that it fits with what we do and it adds to what we do. Is that a sort of project?
Yes, it's a good example. And they're a great fun team to work with, the Ben & Jerry's team. So we actually went around four European markets and looked at different locations. The first one's in Europe.
Well, that was tough then.
Yeah. They're not all like that, I assure you. That's not what I do on a regular
travel around
basis.
The world and come back and tell us what you think.
But fundamentally it's that. What should that concept look like? What should the customer experience be? How should we bring in the values of Ben & Jerry's, the value-led sourcing, the great ice cream, the scooping, the waffle making, you know, and then link it to what customers' expectations are for a cafe, great coffee, you know, great environment and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So it's bringing all those elements together, but underpinned by the values of Ben & Jerry's, but with some great different new products.
That's brilliant. So Kevin, when he gets really successful, which I have no doubt that he will, when you open up your Jim Jam store, obviously somewhere in London, that's the person you need to go to make sure it all looks amazing. Presumably people will be serving with pyjamas on and stuff like that.
That's right, yeah.
Looking good.
We might open one in the Seychelles. So if you want to fly out there.
Oh, yeah, nice idea.
I might fly out there and take a look at it.
Well, I'm sure Mike would be very happy to trot over to the Seychelles for you and do some research.
Absolutely.
Well, you've been listening to the Food Talk show. Kevin Bath from Jim Jams. I just love to see the fact that it's just growing from strength to strength. And I know it's tough running a business, as Simon's been saying, but, you know, stick with it. We need you.
We need more chocolate spread in our lives.
We need to make sure that people understand that the stuff about, you know, dental health for children, don't we? So you know, one of those days when you're feeling it's a bit tough, you are doing something important. So do carry on. Thanks. If you want to learn more about Jim Jams, you need to go to jimjams-spreads.co.uk. Loads of stuff on the website. It's a good website, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lots of stuff to play with.
And I'm looking forward to seeing the new version as well.
Instagram.
Even more stuff to look at and play
with. Instagram, go on there. And again, thank you very much to Simon Fordham, Fordham Henderson Consulting, and that's fordhamhenderson.com. And again, you might want to take the business pressure test. I'm not going to do that. I'm worried. I'm not going on there.
We'll do it together, Sue.
Okay, we'll do it together and see how each of our businesses work.
The results can be amazing, trust me.
Blimey, hope so. Thank you very much for joining us. And again, really, I really like some of the things that you're doing with Food Innovation Solutions, and I know we've only talked about one, but the breadth of that is huge, isn't it? The sorts of companies that you work for and the problems that you've got. So if you're struggling with something like that, definitely go to foodinnovationsolutions.com and have a really good look. I know you've been going for 6 years so far, and you've helped nearly coming up to 100 customers now, haven't you?
It's been a hectic 6 years, but great fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. Do you have to taste a lot?
Yes.
Oh dear, what a shame.
Yeah. That's terrible.
That's why I cycle a lot.
Yeah, that's the sort of job that you want. That's brilliant. So, as I said before, you've been listening to the Food Talk show. We're now syndicated to dozens of radio stations across the UK, and America, and all sorts of other places. Thank you, Guy. You're going to take one of those jars of Jim Jams home with you.
I'm going to be tucking one away in my bag, for sure.
£2.60, please.
Spoken like a true businessman.
Get your money out. Thank you, Guy Routledge of Food Rush. And if you want to recommend any future guests, anybody that's doing something groundbreaking in the food sector, get in touch with us via Twitter on @FoodTalkShow. Or if you want to listen to any of our hundreds of podcasts, go to foodtalk.co.uk. Have a good week. Bye.